What was it? What was it about this story? What was it about Atlanta that drew you to this story?
Well, the idea for the film kind of fell into our lap. Some people who were familiar with what had been considered a very successful transformation of this neighborhood, Eastlake Meadows, came to us and said, you know, you should go look and see what's happened there. And so we went, and we did see a miraculous transformation. What had once been failing public housing had become lovely market-rate condos surrounded by neighborhoods with a vibrant life. There was businesses, banks, there was a green grocer, there were parks, and there was a thriving charter school. And we thought, this is a miraculous transformation. And so we began researching it, and what we discovered was that while the buildings had been replaced, a lot of the people who had once lived there had not been able to return. And so then we thought, you know, now we have an interesting story. So we went and tried to find people who had lived there across the 30 years that Eastlake Meadows had been standing. And we wanted to find out where they had come from, how they ended up living there, what life was like there, and what happened to them when they bulldozed the original houses.
And what can people in Buffalo learn from the story you tell in Atlanta? Are the problems here are they universal, or is it just unique to Eastlake Meadows?
There are many concerns coming out of the Eastlake Meadows story that I think are universal, and so we thought this could be the grain of sand through which we could explore those. I think first and foremost, though, we were interested in telling the stories of people who had lived through it. And while there are themes that we explore that would definitely apply to Buffalo, the thing that ultimately does is that the people who live there, everyone can relate to their stories. Everyone can empathize. People can begin to understand why it is they ended up living there. For a lot of them, this was housing of last resort, the challenges they faced while living there. And I think a sense that their lives are often stereotyped in a certain way. And through telling their stories, we can undo that and begin to put a human face on people who are living in those conditions, who were really isolated and really only talked about in a kind of 6 o'clock news, if it bleeds, it leads type storytelling that did them such a disservice.
And can you speak to the issue of gentrification and where, like, those people who had maybe been living in Eastlake Meadows for generations, once it came down and new units were put up, only about 15%, I believe, returned. What happened to those people?
Well, this was our challenge because when we first went there, we thought we'd be hearing from people living in the market rate and subsidized condos that had replaced them. We thought we'd be hearing about how that transformation went from living in the original housing to this new housing, and it turned out it was a different set of people. And so we struggled to find people. It took us a year. We had to hire a private investigator. We used social media. And we were seeking an array of experiences because things did evolve over 30 years. And so we did get kind of representative stories. There were people who decided rather than sticking around, they would take a Section 8 voucher. And we learned how they struggled to find housing with that Section 8 voucher because landlords wouldn't take it. We found people who were suspicious of the process and bailed before they could even be considered for the new housing and went and found housing elsewhere. We did meet people who stuck around all the way through what was a multi-year process and were able to return, only to find that while the rent was the same, the four or five new bills that they had to pay were too much and they could only stay there for a year. Or the way the culture had changed within the community made it unpalatable for them to stay, so they left. And so then if you weren't on a housing roll, you weren't considered for any of those things anyway. And that was the majority of people. So when they opened the housing, they set a standard for who could return. And in some cases, if maybe someone in your family had a blemish on their record, you weren't going to be considered to come back anyway. And so maybe you went to another housing project, but ultimately in Atlanta, those were torn down. Maybe you moved outside of the city. There was a kind of reverse white flight happening at that time and found another community. But no matter what, the community that did exist, a community that had bonds that had been shaped over years, people were able to lean each other to find work, to find rides here and there for childcare. All of that went away when the bulldozers came.
And I think you put that very poignantly, and I think the same thing, although maybe we're a few decades behind, but the same thing is happening here in Buffalo. What can different communities learn from the Eastlake Meadow story?
Well, I think this is a process, of course, and in the case of Eastlake Meadows, it took years, and there were some well-intended people who were trying to make a community better and more functional, and there are unintended consequences. I think one thing to learn is it's paramount to keep the people in the community at the forefront of all conversations around what's going to happen to the neighborhood. Make sure the tenant association president has a voice. Make sure the people that they've organized get to come to the table. Make sure that the community is about the people, not the structures, and make them a part of whatever the transformation is. And, you know, the situations in every city are different. I mean, we're experiencing a kind of now decades-old reverse white flight. People are interested in living in urban areas again. And these are people from families, in many cases, that departed in the 50s, 60s, and 70s and took their tax dollars with them and left communities to molder with disinvestment. And now, as people return, and we just want to make sure not to displace but to include. And if that is kept in the foreground, I think it'll be a better process. Some of these forces are inevitable. They're here. But you can find communities where the right conversations are happening and the right thoughtfulness is present in discussions about how to make sure that the outcomes are good for the people who live there when suddenly the land they were on became attractive again to developers and to people who had left years ago.
And speaking of developers, the rebuilding of Eastlake Meadows, now that was through, obviously, the Atlanta Housing Authority, but who did they work with? Who the Cousins Foundation? Who are they?
Well, the Cousins Family Foundation was a central player in the transformation of Eastlake. Eastlake was really a public-private partnership. But Eastlake was one of many projects in Atlanta, and there was a massive effort underway in Atlanta in the mid-90s to tear down all public housing and replace it with a voucher system. And so Eastlake was not the first, but it was one of the first to go down. And that transformation relied upon the generous contributions of the Cousins family. They had a stake in the neighborhood, and they wanted to see this failing housing project get converted into something that was more attractive for the community on the whole. Renee Glover, who headed the Atlanta Housing Authority at the time, this was a bold stroke of hers to tear down all of this housing. And she brought a kind of religious fervor to the job. And I think her sense was that nobody should be living in these places. They're so bad. Anything could be better. Let's tear them down and start over with a different kind of mentality and a different type of effort. I think that was on the heels of a period where crack swept through these neighborhoods, where the media portrayed people living in housing in a particular way. There was a desire to sort of stop investing. I mean, the investment had kind of ended a long time ago, but to say, maybe we got this wrong, maybe we should get rid of these places and do something different. And she was riding that wave. Atlanta was riding that wave. And when they got to Eastlake Meadows, they had a private interest that they could partner with to do a transformation that was unique to this one community, Eastlake Meadows, but that has been explored as a means to this public-private partnership to transforming other communities across the country.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you think that's going to be the plan moving forward in cities across the country, this private-public investment to keep these communities together.
You know, I can't speak too well to other communities that have done this specific kind of work to transform a community. But what I can say is in places like Boston and San Francisco, there are communities in New Mexico that have brought a really thoughtful process to transforming a housing project that could be considered failing. And that there are communities where they have been able to get nearly 100% of the original residents back into the new housing while also lifting the surrounding neighborhood, making new market rate housing, bringing in businesses, greengrocers, boosting the school, but making sure that the original residents are part of that transformation. And so I'd like to think that there were things to take from East Lake Meadows to emulate and that there were things to do differently, that anyone looking closely at how that went would have a lot to learn, both positive and negative, about how to undertake a transformation like this. But I don't know that there is a silver bullet or there is one that has been so effective that it can just be replicated everywhere. I think that actually everyone needs to learn from each other. There's housing that was succeeding all across the 20th century that people don't talk about. We tend to talk about Cabrini Green or Pruitt-Igoe or some of the Atlanta projects like Bankhead Court or Clark Howell. There were certain projects in that community that were torn down twice as they tried to do rehabilitation across the 20th century. That there's a lot to learn from across the 20th century about how to do this wrong, certainly, and how to do it partially correctly. But I'm not sure we've ever aced it.
So how long did it take you to put this all together?
It was 3 years in the making from the time we first went and visited the community to the time that we locked the film and it was ready to share with an audience. And honestly, the lifeblood of this movie really is the former residents who generously shared their stories. And they really made it possible to show a broad cross-section of experience, what life was like there, that there were the kind of tragedies that we've come to associate with a space like East Lake Meadows. But there was also a community of people who had good times, who raised kids there, who leaned on each other to make sure they could get through days, that partied, that sent kids off to college on music scholarships, that helped each other get jobs, that played stickball until sunset in the field next door, and the people that made a way out of no way. And we thought that we should put that at the center, that these were, we wanted to show the lived experiences here. And it did take time to find people because they had been scattered.
I think one of my favorite clips from the film is a girl is being filmed that she might be in her prom. She's in a prom dress and she goes, are you filming? And the camera person's like, no. It's like, I see that red light. And then she comes towards her. I think, and I to your point, I think it's those little film clips of life in East Lake Meadows that really, really makes the film.
I think so too. I think that getting to see people in their, you know, day-to-day lives enjoying this, suffering for that, leaning on each other, I hope makes viewers lean forward a little bit, have empathy, especially those who are unfamiliar with anybody who's lived in public housing. I think it's, we were trying to put a human face on a situation that too often has really just been reduced to the things that had gone wrong there. And instead we wanted to highlight just ordinary everyday life as it unfolded there.
And finally, something interesting that you came across during your 3 years of making this film.
I was surprised to learn that as a country, we subsidize through the mortgage interest deduction, I believe it is called, wealthy people buying million-dollar homes to a much greater extent that we subsidize housing for poor people.
Well, David, appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Thomas.